Peshtigo in 1871 was a small town on the Peshtigo River that flows into Green Bay. It was just like other mill towns in the upper Midwest. Lumberjacks cut the trees and left the branches in huge tangles in the woods. Mill workers sawed the logs and made great piles of slabs and sawdust. Settlers burned the stumps to clear land for farming, and the men clearing a route for the new railroad burned whatever was in their way. 1871 was a very dry year.
There were fires burning all summer and into the fall.
Peter Leschak is the author of Ghosts of the Fire Ground, a reflection of the Peshtigo fire and his own experiences of firefighting.
Slash and burn agriculture, land clearing, the railroad guys clearing line, and nobody put out fires in those days.
The branches left in huge piles everywhere turned to tinder, ready to burn hot and long. Small fires were burning all around, but people saw fire as a good thing.
The farmers were used to it.
Denise Guess is the author of Firestorm at Peshtigo, a detailed history of the disaster.
Even the immigrants who came from Belgium and Norway, Sweden, everywhere, Germany, they knew this is how you clear land fire. They saw fire as an ally.
People were used to fires even when they got out of control. But Peter Leschak says no one was prepared for what happened at Peshtigo that day.
The big trees they were cutting were red pine and white pine. And when that stuff gets to be red slash, as it's called, when it dries out, it's incredibly volatile.
On October 8th, a huge cold front swept in from the west. Furious winds fanned prairie fires all over the region. In the cut-over timberlands, the big brush piles and the dry conditions combined to create a conflagration.
Basically, at one point or another, several small fires join into one huge fire. It becomes more or less stationary over Peshtigo.
The blazes developed into a fire storm. The heat generated by the burning trees and buildings caused a column of hot air to rise over the town. Cold air rushing in to take its place fanned the flames. That caused more hot air to rise. The town was at the center of a tornado of flame. The fire was coming from all directions at once, and the winds were roaring at 100 miles an hour. Some people struggled to the river. They stood in the water for hours while the flames whirled in a fury over their heads. Some of them survived.
They are witnessing something that very few people have ever witnessed and lived to tell the tale, which is they're at the center of this hurricane of flame. And small wonder their hair was bursting into flame if they didn't keep ducking their heads into the water. And to have survived that is just amazing, just amazing.
Most people weren't so lucky. Carl Lamp and his wife were German immigrants. Denise Guess says they were clearing land for a farm.
She was pregnant with their fourth child when the fire struck, and he managed to get them all out of the house and onto a wagon and thought that they could run from it, but you can't run from a fire that's moving that quickly. And the wagon wheel fell off, and he saw that the family was still safe. The horse went up in flames. He turned around for a second and turned back, and there was his whole family in flames.
The ambient air temperature is probably 500, 600, 700 degrees, which means that, you know, they weren't going to live very long. Anyway, if your clothes are bursting into flame, you are also doing extreme damage to your respiratory tract. You know, I think there was probably a lot of intense pain that went on. And I think that's why, for example, there's the account of the one man who slit the throats of all of his children to spare them this death by fire.
The fire went out when it had burned up everything in Peshtigo. No one knows exactly how many people died, but it was close to 2,000, more people than in any other fire in American history. The survivors rebuilt the town, but it wasn't a booming mill town anymore. The trees were gone. But that wasn't the end of the monstrous fires. As the lumber camps and railroads and settlers moved west, the fires moved with them. Timber companies were making too much money to quit.
It wasn't worth it to them to treat the slash, to log in a way that would not create such fuel. And essentially that era ended when all the big timber was gone.
Forests in the Great Lakes region wouldn't burn so disastrously today because the trees aren't as big and the forests don't hold as much fuel. But the real lesson of the Peshtigo fire might be that it's a mistake to ignore signs of disaster just because, at the moment, we're getting what we want from nature. For the Great Lakes Radio Consortium, I'm Stephanie Hemphill.